Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Stone Payton, Katie Galley here with you this morning. Conspicuously absent is our fearless leader, Lee Cantor, headed to South Florida for a couple of days, but I think we can pull this off without him. What do you think?
I think we can.
All right. Before we go into the show, though, get me caught up on your podcast. Keep moving forward. You got some exciting interviews coming up or one or two that you've thoroughly enjoyed recently?
This week I'm going to release episode 121. That'll be coming out tomorrow. Last week I had the chance to interview the manager of corporate partnerships with the Atlanta Braves. I met him at a conference a couple weeks ago, and he was really interesting. He had a great story, and it was just interesting to hear his journey through sports marketing and his career.
So. All right, 121 episodes.
Yeah.
There is no episode 100.
There is not an episode 100.
Very briefly, please explain to our group why.
Because I reserved that episode for The Rock. I'm doing a social media pursuit to try and get him on my podcast. So reserved episode 100 forever for him until that interview happens, which I believe it will.
Well, eventually. I saw a twinkle in one of our guest's eyes. Sonny, I think Sonny's going to hook you up.
Oh, really? Sonny, do you know him?
No, I'm sorry. I don't. I wish I did.
Somebody has to know. I'm just going to make that first connection, and then there we go.
All right. Okay, first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, please join me in welcoming from the Dubroff Group, Miss Sydney Dubroff. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I love the fact that we talked about connections, too, because that is my game.
It's very relevant to what you do.
Absolutely. The older you get, the less degrees of separation you are.
Ooh.
So just keep living. Just keep living and you'll get there.
I'm thinking maybe when The Rock is like 80 years old. Maybe then.
I think much sooner.
Much sooner?
72.
Okay, there you go. There you go. Yes.
So tell us about the Dubroff Group. What are you out there trying to do for folks?
So the Dubroff Group is my company, and what we do is help organizations, either nonprofits or for-profits, find executives. Typically, we work in the C-suite. Now, that's been the bread and butter of my business. I've been doing search for 25 years.
Wow. Started when you were 7.
Only 7, I know. Child labor laws were not in effect at that time, so I got to go to work. About 20 years into it, we noticed that many of our candidates were asking for coaching. How do I do? You know, they weren't even asking for it. We were, quite frankly, giving it to them because they needed it. So we offered a second product, service, if you will, to individuals who need some help transitioning. Usually they're mid-careers, not early careers. Mid-career transitions, either within their own organization or to another one. And that's kind of fun because we do it on the telephone and you get to see the results with your candidates. So I have the best job in the world.
Now, the client base, national or regional?
Global. Actually global, yes.
Wow.
I have an undergraduate degree in international relations, which means I can work with people from all over the world. Most of our clients are, however, up and down the Eastern Seaboard, New York, Boston, D.C., Chicago. I'm kicking off a search this month, actually, with an organization in San Francisco. Some of our clients you've heard of, like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation we've done work for, the George W. Bush Institute. Those are the big nonprofits we've worked with, but we've also worked with little tiny nonprofits that are $1 million or less in revenue. Also have a $15 to $17 billion for-profit company traded on the New York Stock Exchange that I had never heard of until they called me. I'm almost ashamed to admit. But that's the great thing about being in executive search. You learn something new every darn day.
Wow. We were nonprofit half of April and all of May. So, if I remember what the books look like.
Not intentionally, not gathering.
Right.
Right. Even the nonprofits have to pay their bills. They just don't pay taxes.
Well, and some nonprofits are run very well, and they may use a different word, but they generate a very handsome profit, and rightly so. They're doing good work, and they should, right?
Absolutely, Stone. They have to keep the lights on. They have to keep their people employed and educated and trained, and they have to be a good place to work. Otherwise, nobody's going to want to work for them, even if they are doing good work.
So walk us through the process, if you will. Well, let me ask this question. You have to work both sides of it, right? So you have the client, the nonprofit, and then you have the talent. You're talking to the talent all the time as well, you and your team. Walk us through. You don't have to name any names if you don't want to, but just walk us through the process.
Sure. The process for an executive search is the hiring organization, either for-profit or nonprofit, determines they have a need. It could be a new position, or it could be someone who's retired or has left the organization. So I sit down with them and we decide, okay, what does the dream candidate, remember Barbie's dream date? What does the dream CFO look like? What does the dream CEO look like? And we put on our fantasy hats and then we go out to the market and reality hits. We realize that, okay, maybe we can only afford a master's and not a PhD, or maybe we're going to have to pay a little bit more in relocation. So the market tells us and it makes us adjust our sights. Obviously, with 25 years of experience, I've got a good sense, but as I said before, you learn something new every day. So go to market, and thank goodness for Al Gore, because I don't know how we did search before the internet. And I did do search before the internet. It was not a pretty thing. But I do, if there are any candidates out there listening, make sure that your digital profile is accurate and professional. And that includes, of course, LinkedIn. But corporations and nonprofits look at your Facebook page and any other digital trails you may have out there. So LinkedIn is a big tool for us. And even if it's a new search where I've never done it before, for example, this summer I've been working on a commissioning engineer, never knew something like that existed. It's hard. The engineers are not risk takers. They do not want to change jobs. So, but it, you know, I get to learn, and knock wood, let's hope that our candidate this week does well. So we go out to market, we pitch the organization to individuals, and we come back to the organization and say, okay, look at these people on paper. What do you think about them? Oh, this is good, but please tell me why you transitioned from job A to job B. Oh, and can you find out, you know, what type of crises he was really handling there? So we dig a little deeper. Most of my candidates I interview in person, not all. And then we present them to the client. The client goes through a series of interviews. Sometimes there's homework assignments, and we both prep the client on what's realistic to ask the candidate to do, and then help the candidate, of course, show up wearing his best game face or her best game face. We also help with the negotiations of the offer. Now, a lot of my clients say, well, do you do psychological testing? I'm like, we don't, because suppose client A does test B, right? Okay, so I administer test B, but client 2 does test 3. Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to learn test 3 too? So no, the clients are responsible for doing their own psychological profiling and their own criminal back and financial background checks. But we do references.
And do you have maybe a favorite search story throughout your 25 years of experience that just really stands out to you?
You know what's interesting? I don't know whether it's just me or all of America, but immediately I turn towards the negatives. And I think, oh, you know, well, I will tell you, I've been doing business for what, a quarter of a century. I've only had 3 deaths. So I feel like that's pretty good. One candidate was not responding to my emails and calls. I'm like, what? He was so interested. How could he go dark on me? Honest to God, I was at the beauty parlor reading the paper, and I read his obit.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. So you never know what's going to happen. We had another candidate get killed in a terrorist attack. So those are rare. I don't want to scare anyone off from going to executive search. No, just, it's really rare. But the great things, I think, are when I place someone, and then a year or 2 years later, they get promoted within the organization. Mm-hmm. So you know you've made a great match. And it's also great when your client asks you to come back and do another search. For that $15 billion New York Stock Exchange company I talked about, it's XPO Logistics. And we've done 19 placements for them now.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's nice to build those relationships. And that's the thing. If you're not a people person, if relationships don't mean much to you, this is not the business
not
for you.
And do you, Amy, is that characteristic then if you place someone and then you follow back up with them a year or 2 years later to see how they've grown in the organization or see how they fit well in the organization?
Right. That's another thing. The longer you're in business, the more of those follow-up calls you have to make and see how everybody's doing.
Yeah.
And also, if you think about it, we were talking about this before we went on air, you never know. Kwame may be a candidate tomorrow. Sonny may be a reference. I don't know what Stone's going to be, but
I just show up.
Yeah,
people can be all different kinds of things in your life. And so it works for me and me people when your lines are blurred.
Mm. Wow.
So do you find yourself gravitating to certain industries or certain sectors over the years?
I love working with the nonprofits because even though they're going to developing countries and helping with environment or child nutrition, things that I quite frankly am not well suited to do, I feel like I'm having a part in it. So, you know, I'm part of making the world a better place. I also love learning new things. So if I have a client who's doing something different, changing the way logistics and warehousing are done, like XPO, or working buildings, change, you know, really making their clients be successful, I love that. I tend not to work with the SIN companies, but usually I just like to work with people who are smart and honest, and let's learn together. Because if you aren't honest, if your clients aren't honest, if your candidates aren't honest, you're going to have a failed relationship.
And so you said, I mean, having an online presence is so key. So from both ends of that, do you offer coaching or advice to people who are looking to come and be placed, and also companies as well that are looking for particular candidates? Do you offer on both ends of the spectrum, or is it really a focus on people that you're looking to place?
Katie, I'm glad you asked that. With your corporate clients, it's harder to make them change their corporate website.
Right.
Like Coca-Cola is not going to change its colors for me. And I don't want it. I like red. Look at my website. It's got red too. But you do want to encourage your corporate clients to understand that a search is a marketing exercise. Mm-hmm. And every point of contact that I or anyone else within the company has with someone outside of the company is a chance to leave an impression, good, bad, or rarely indifferent. So even if the candidate isn't the right one, you want them walking away going, gosh, what a great organization. Or even if it's a nonprofit, gosh, I'm writing a check. I need to support these guys. For the candidates, for the individuals, the job seekers, yes, I have encouraged them to wear less makeup in their professional headshot. Hmm. I've encouraged them to change their email address from Mrs. Sally Jones to just Sally Jones. So yes, you do have to make those suggestions. And I'm a firstborn, so I've been bossing my brothers around a long time. So suggestion giving is not hard for me.
Right.
Maybe take that post down of the ride on the rum boat on Facebook. You can get that off of there before you...
Right. Exactly. Just be judicial in what you share. Judicious in what
She'd
you share.
Make me wear socks and tuck my shirt in.
She probably would. Yeah.
It depends on what job you're looking for.
Well, she would just suggest it, though.
So how does the whole sales and marketing thing work for you? Because I'm operating under the impression that it is a crowded arena that you're in. And so, does the phone ring? You've got some sort of... structured sales and marketing process, or how does that work?
Well, you know, I'm very structured and organized in actually executing the search engagements. For sales and marketing, less so, because I'm spending more of my time on client work. Most of my business is referral. It's word of mouth.
I'll bet.
We don't do any advertising. This is about as much marketing as I've done in a while, and thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate that.
Our pleasure.
But there's no barrier to entry. Anyone can come into this industry. You need a computer, and you need a phone, and you need, as I said, good people skills, I think. A good memory helps, and if not, at least a very good database. So anybody can come in and out. If you watch the listing of the numbers of executive search organizations in up economies, there are tons of them. And when the economy sinks, they all disappear. Many of them disappear. So I guess I've got the crow's feet and the gray hair to show that I've lived through three down economies and still here to talk about it. And clients appreciate that. And one of the things you haven't asked me, but I'm going to volunteer, why did I name my organization the Dubroff Group? Because I could have called it Search Is Us or whatever. Well, I was talking to some of my European clients, and they said, put your name on it because we know the buck stops there and you're going to be responsible for your brand and your reputation. Exactly. Yeah. And it made it a whole lot easier to think of something cute like Kodak or Coke or Google.
But it's true. I mean, it's all the experience that you bring into the organization, and it's what you're able to give to corporations as well as the people that you're looking to place. And so with that, I mean, I know from my own personal experience, when I was about to graduate college, I had to go through my career center and just all the business classes I was taking, refining my resume and going through interview skills, preparing for the next step, preparing for a career. But everyone seemed to have different pieces of advice for what your resume should look like, how you should present yourself. And they were all kind of dancing around a similar theme, but everybody had different takes. So, I mean, it's a different organization might receive a different resume, your resume, if you give it out to a bunch of different companies in different ways. So in your opinion, from the Dubroff Group, then what do you look for in a resume? What do you look for as kind of standards of excellence for someone that you're going to place?
And I've had the benefit of working for three major firms. So It's not just my own opinion, but it's a melding of all three. Four, if you count mine. No photograph in America. In Europe, it's accepted, but do not put your photograph on your resume. Don't have any typos. I think everybody agrees on that.
Yeah.
And do realize that you may be sending me one resume and Kwame another and Sunny a third.
Right.
But they could all cross paths. So you can vary it a little bit, but within a range, and tell the truth. Do not, if you don't have a degree, don't put on there that you have a degree. If you do have a degree, put the date that you graduated. Do not try to hide your age, because a good recruiter is going to confirm that degree, and a good employer is going to confirm that degree. So we're going to need to know the age, the year you graduated at some point. And if you're between the ages of 40 and 60, you are a protected class. Theoretically, you cannot be be subject to discrimination, but we all know that's tough.
The truth's a lot easier to remember in your interview too, right?
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm in that protected age. And yes, I have to stick to the truth. I put your LinkedIn address on there. I'd put your full address. I'd put your name. Don't, if you are married, do not put Mrs. If you're not married, don't put Mrs. irrelevant. And recruiters generally like to see your resume in reverse chronological order. Put your most recent job first. Unless you are recent 5 years out of college, put your education at the end.
Helpful. Wow. All right. We got us a little mini webinar we can publish now, right?
Yeah, right.
Charge $13.95 for
it. Absolutely.
Do I get a piece of that?
Absolutely. We're good at sharing.
Yeah.
Before we wrap, let's give me and the other young people out there a little advice. Because you're in the belly of the beast, right? You're out there. You see what's happening in the economy. Any advice you want to share, but I was thinking particularly around career paths to at least, you know, investigate, explore.
I'm so glad you asked that question, because I think about that. I have young people in my family, and I remember back when I was a young person, and my dad and I, my undergraduate degree didn't get me very far. Got his bank account very far, but not me. And we looked in the want ads of the paper. Do you remember those things, the papers, those physical things? And the most type was in the section of accountancy. So I marched off to Georgia State and I got a master's degree in tax accounting, because I found it more interesting than auditing, and I didn't want to carry one of those big brown bags back in the day. And I did tax accounting for 2 years with what was then called Coopers & Lybrand, and I cried for 2 years in my gray cubicle. So while I was going for supply and demand, and yes, I could get a job, I wasn't listening to my heart. And so when you're a young person, try to listen to your heart and know your heart is still learning. And try lots of different things. Even after college, you're still going through your undergraduate part of life. And then once you got it a little bit narrowed down, then look at supply and demand. But try, you know, if you're a numbers person, there's so many jobs that, you know, in the STEM careers, especially. If you want to be an actress, try being an actress when you're a young person, because it's probably harder than when you're 60.
All right. Where can our listeners go to learn more if they'd like to have a conversation with you or someone on your team about these topics? What's the best way for them to reach out?
The best way is dubroff.com. D as in David, U, B as in boy, R-O-F like Frank.com.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming and hanging with us this morning.
It's been a pleasure. I love this.
Hey, stay with us. We're going to visit with a couple more guests.
Absolutely.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us VP Business Development with National Benefit Programs. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Sonny Wooten. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Stone.
So what did you learn in that last segment?
The one from Sydney?
Yeah.
It's a tough act to follow. Really a tough act to follow. Enterprise is live. The economy is supporting the development of businesses such as Sydney's, and she's flourishing, and that's really, really good to know. That's part of what my job is, and part of my focus is on small business survival. Uh-huh. And I've always been an advocate of small business my whole career since 1979. So I am driven to help small businesses survive and thrive in a very competitive economy. So that's basically my mandate.
All right. So tell us a little bit about the company, the practice, what you're out there doing for folks.
It's a very unique platform, if you will. What we are attempting to do is bring the capability of small businesses to procure products and services that they need at a wholesale rate that's equal to or less than the big box competitors that they have. So what we have designed since 2009 is a procurement portal that has multiple vendors in it that are the products and services that small businesses use daily or most often. And we have negotiated with all of these providers and suppliers very, very deep discounts. And we invite small businesses to come in and subscribe to our service, our portal, and get very, very deep discounts in those products and services that they use every day. It's really interesting in the small business realm. As much as 43% of all of their capital purchases in a year's time are indirect procurement or indirect products and services. That means they're not planned and they're not budgeted.
Sounds familiar. Katie and I might be co-hosts, but we're also two-thirds of the leadership team for the network. Go ahead.
Well, what's important is that they buy these things, but they buy them indiscriminately.
You're reading my mail, aren't you?
So they don't think about how they purchase these items. They don't shop. They don't negotiate. If I need pencils, if I need paper for the printer, if I need inkjet for the printer, if I need to pick up some insurance here or there, or if I need to ship a package or a parcel with a shipping company, these are things that are basically unplanned. They do them when they need to do them, as quick as they can do them, but they don't do them with focus on price. So what we try to do is fill in that gap for them. So we give them a portal that gets them access to some of the top brand names in the country with incredible discounts, and we achieve these discounts very easily. We have over 150,000 subscribers right now.
Wow. Dang.
So that kind of volume gives us a little bit of leverage when working with these companies. The other companies that do similar to what we do, and there's not really any specific to the small business focus like we are, but they will normally refer customers to a business and then get a referral fee for that referral. Now, all of those requirements require IT and a lot of information trading, so you can understand the sourcing and this, that, and the other. So it's pretty expensive. So what we chose to do is we chose not to work that way. What we do is we take whatever referral fee we would get and have them build it into the discount. So therefore, if their standard discount is, say, 25%, and they have a 5% referral fee, we say, well, we want the 30% because we don't want that referral fee. And what does that do for us? That assures us that we have by far the deepest discount out there because their maximum discount's 25, but we've thrown the other 5 in there. So we always have a strong assurance that we are the deepest discounter in the marketplace in regards to these brands. So that is how our model works. Now, we do not directly subscribe small businesses. We work through various distribution channels, and we engage them to approach small business. We ask them to build it into their programs. A good example is we are a terrific incentive, which means that if you're a business and you have customers and you wish to reward them for their loyalty and give them a really dazzling offer that makes you very, very, to differentiate yourself from your competitors, you could deliver this product, this portal to your customers. And customers are surprised to see someone come out of left field and say, hey, instead of me taking money from you every month and you write me a check, let me give you something back. Now, the typical small business using our portal will save around $1,500 a year in these indirect purchases and the discounts that they would get. As a matter of fact, a local optometrist group here that has multiple stores, we surveyed them, and in the first year they were procuring through our portal, they saved over $7,000.
Wow.
Well, that's a real number at that level. So are associations a viable client group, and they can serve their members with this kind
Correct. Anybody that has relationships downstream that have memberships or subscription services, any kind of models like that at all can use our product. Now, what we do is we bill the distributor a wholesale rate, a monthly subscription fee, and then they can pass it through, whether giving it to their customers for free or reselling it and marking it up. But the most important thing that we achieve with this product is we cause these businesses to become indispensable. An example is, if your competitor walks into the door, one of your customers, and your customer really likes this program and they see the savings that they're getting every year, if that competitor can't replicate that savings, then there's a very, very good chance that that customer is not going to trite from you and move to that competitor. So we really add stickiness to customers. And it's a very, very fine product. And we started here in Atlanta because, you know, we're known as Transaction Alley, where all of the bank card processing that goes on here. So that's our primary channel. That was our initial channel that we worked with these 150,000 merchant subscribers we have right now. We use that channel for distribution. Now, that's our leading channel, but we are now divesting, and that's the reason why I came on board after 36 years with American Express. Is
so you had a real job before all this.
I did. But the passion is better when you're smaller. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
So I have real passion in what I'm doing now with American Express. That passion can sometimes get a little diluted. So I am singularly focused today at trying to get small businesses the best deal they can get out there so they can thrive and be competitive. I want them, as we know, small businesses is the lifeblood of the community. They hire our teenagers. They support our local causes. They are our neighbors, and they are our friends. And we do know that they're critical to the U.S. economy, too. So my job right now, my mandate is to help small businesses set deep roots so whenever that next recession may come along, they have enough momentum that they can push right through all the way to the other side. So helping these small businesses save money, help them where, you know, reinvest in growth is my mandate, and that's what my company does.
I want your help, Sonny.
And Sonny, how did you develop such a heart for the small business owner? I mean, with your background in American Express for 36 years and then now with the national benefit programs, but where does your heart for the small business owner come from?
It started an understanding. I was in the lodging business and the travel business back in the mid-70s. And I saw the spending power of American Express card members as they travel. And I found that many American Express card members use their cards only when they traveled. So I said, wait a minute. They have these attributes of being high spenders. Why can't they do it locally? Why do they have to reserve all of their spending power for travel? So I started with American Express based on a whole community initiative. And I was the only way American Express card members would spend is only if they had places to spend at. So I went to small businesses in the community and said, listen, you have buying power that is in this community. I have a way to release it for you. So that's what I did for so many years was sell merchants to accept American Express so they could enjoy the buying power of those card members locally. So I spent, I built two new platforms at American Express, all designed to support small business and to invite them into that network so they can enjoy the spending power of those card members, just like the big box competitors do.
And are those platforms that you created, are they still in use today? Is this like a lasting thing?
Yes. One is the final one that just came out is an evolution of an interim that we did. And the final solution right now is inviting small businesses to be able to accept at approximately the same price as their big box competitors, which is unheard of in the old days. I know a lot of people think that Amex was the highest priced product in the marketplace, but that's no longer so.
And so you mentioned that NBP started here in Atlanta. It's Transaction Alley. So where do you see the trajectory of the company going and just looking towards, I guess, the growth of small businesses?
We're in the fintech capital of the world, and I'd like to claim that we're part of the fintech community, but we're really not. We started in 2009, so next month we'll celebrate our 9th anniversary. So we were here long before it became the fintech capital of the world. The other thing, too, is we're so incredibly simple. Like I said, we don't do any big data transfers. We're incredibly simple. So we're very, very easy to implement and use. So I see small business today growing at a rapid, rapid rate. We see that in the news. We understand that it's critical to the economy. We see that they're becoming more and more competitive because of digitalization. I mean, when I'm looking on a website, Sydney, I don't know if you are a multi-million dollar executive search firm or not. You can sure look that way on the website, and I wouldn't know the difference.
I like to spin that way.
Well, that's good. That's good. So I think small businesses can stand toe-to-toe to big businesses all day long. We see the demise of malls. Mm-hmm. And we know people are looking for convenience and will pay for convenience. And that includes instead of going and trudging in the mall, if there's a local supplier, price points aren't as important as convenience and time. And I think that's what small businesses fulfill today for today's consumers.
All right. So let's walk it through Business Radio X, a business radio network. We have 7 studio partners. So we have studios in Phoenix and Tucson and Pensacola, and we keep trying to expand. If we wanted to provide some added value to our studio partners who are really in business for themselves, but they're able to tap into our brand equity, so it's a close family kind of thing, walk us through what that would look like. We would be your client?
You could be our client. And, okay. And what we do is we are completely invisible on the back end. So we white label it. So what's very important is whoever our distributor is the one who gets all of the accolades and all of the applause from their customers for the discounts.
Right, because you're part of the Business Radio X network instead of just trying to be, Jim's podcast in Tucson, you're a Business Radio X studio. What we can we're providing them with access to 60 plus vendors who have and stuff that they need and want. I mean, you've got staples. All kind of stuff they're going to need and want to run their business in Tucson.
Is that correct?
Is that accurate?
That's correct. So all our
I'm the hero because I made that happen. That's one of many benefits of being part of the network.
That is correct. And if they chose not to do business with you, Stone, and they walked away, they would have to leave that portal access behind.
There's the sticky part.
That's the sticky part.
We use that word a lot when we're having corporate network meetings, don't we?
Yeah. So It's a wonderful model. It needs to be proliferated throughout the whole economy. It's a great model for small businesses so they can stand toe-to-toe with their biggest competitors. And that's what my job is. So I'm interested in associations. I'm interested in companies that have subscriber models where they can deliver value added that is almost shocking for their customers. Example being, let's say I'm a billing company and I bill for healthcare or something, and all of a sudden downstream to all the doctors and physicians that are my their customers, they get an opportunity to say, hey, I can save you 50% on every purchase almost from Office Depot. I can save you 28% on UPS. I can save you 27% on ADP.
Well, and that's just it. It's not just products. It's product and service.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's only going to continue to grow that universe of products and services.
Absolutely, absolutely. What we try to do is we try to keep it very specific to small business. We don't do any consumer stuff. You will see consumer offers all the time. Where you can join a club and get discounts, whether it's like Costco or Sam's Club or things like that. But we're specific to small to medium business. So we've got software, we've got hardware, we've got insurance. We even have a very special organization that does background checks for employees I believe it's $21.95 per check. Which means I think the going rate now is $49.59 or more. So what we do is we find those very, very relevant businesses and we bring them into our network. Now, we do lose vendors on occasion. I'll give you a great example. Right now, we don't have any rental cars. And the reason why is the rental car companies now are guaranteeing the best price that you can get from their website direct. So they're not giving any discounts. So we had to say, thank you, but if we can't give a deep discount to our customer, we can't support you on our portal.
I love it. All right, where can our listeners go to learn more? What's the best way for them to look into this and have a conversation?
Well, the easiest way is to go to our website, and that's www.nationalbenefitprograms.com, or we can be reached at 877-688-8844. Would love to hear from anyone that would be interested in trying to integrate our model into your program for your customers.
Marvelous. Well, thank you, Sonny. Keep up the good work, man, and we're going to continue to follow your progress. And
I want your card.
And Sydney wants your card.
There you go. Okay. Making connections.
There you go. All right, Katie, you ready for the headliner?
I am.
He's been very patient. Yeah. I think he's derived some value from the last couple of segments. I thought I saw him take a couple of notes.
Yeah.
He won even before we went on air. I think we all acknowledge that he won the Best Dressed Award.
No doubt.
He might have forgotten it was radio, or he may have like real business stuff to do after the show. But please join me in welcoming President and CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Metro Atlanta, Mr. Kwame Johnson. How are you, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, we are delighted to have you. The moment that I saw on the calendar that we were going to get a chance to visit with someone from this organization, I was excited. I would have been here even if Lee were going to be here and co-host with Katie, but I get to do it without Lee. So welcome. Give us a little bit of an overview, if you would, a primer, mission, purpose for the organization, why you guys exist, and the good you guys are trying to do.
Great. Thank you for having me on the show. And, you know, our sole purpose is really to help young people reach their full potential. We've been around since the 60s here in Atlanta. I joined the organization about 5 months ago. Actually, Sydney worked with a search firm and went through that process. And
Did they treat you right?
Yeah, they did. It was a great, great process. Boardwalk Consulting did a great job. And I'm just glad to be on the team and just, you know, here to take our work to the next level. We serve all 12 counties. We pair adults, which we call bigs, with littles, which are young people in the community. And last year, we served 2,000 young people. We're the largest, most effective mentoring organization in the state of Georgia. And we are, you know, really set on just helping more young people in Atlanta reach their full potential.
And so what does that look like, helping young people reach their full potential? What would you, just pairing them with a mentor and having them do they have similar interests? I mean, what does that process look like?
Yeah, so, you know, a big part of me coming on this show is really to help, you know, recruit more bigs. That's our biggest challenge.
Okay.
And so I'm going to start with the folks in the room. So I'll use you, Katie, as an example.
Okay.
And, you know, you have a podcast. You seem to be very successful. I'm sure there's a young lady in Atlanta who would like to be just like you one day. And if you could dedicate, you know, a few hours out of the month to mentor a young person, to help them sort of navigate life and, you know, get to where you are. And that's exactly how it works. And it's through relationships. I really preach that relationships change people, not programs. Mm-hmm. I've been in nonprofit my whole career. And through relationships, I've seen just some special things happen for kids really in some tough situations. So we're really trying to find folks like you in the community who have some free time to pour into a young person to help them navigate life.
And what would that look like, the mentorship? So the commitment from a big, what would they do? You're saying it's a couple hours a month, but is it just really up to them how much they want to invest? Or
yeah, no, great question, because it is a big, you know, big undertaking. You know, you're taking in a young person into your life, and that can be scary to some people who don't have kids, who've never mentored someone. So what's different about our model is it's very flexible. So what we ask for is a year commitment, because you are coming into a young person's life, and we want to make sure that you don't come in and you know, with good intentions cause harm, because that can happen in a lot of mentoring programs. So we say start with a year. Most of our matches last 3 years, plus we have matches that have last 20 years.
Wow.
And we say, you know, a few outings a month, you know, so 6 hours. And we say, hey, build the relationship organically as it grows. I tell people that you don't have to create new time. You have to just include that young person in your existing time. We all go to the grocery store. We all go to the movies. We all go to dinner. And those things may seem little to us, but to a young person, that could be a big, big game changer. So that's the commitment. And we, you know, help you grow that relationship over time. We have a team of staff that actually support the match to make sure that you're successful and provide you resources to outings, to basketball games, and to different things that are happening in the community, so you're not doing this alone.
Yeah. And so then how do littles get involved in the program? Are you actively looking for them, or do young people just know of these organizations in their community, like the Atlanta, the Metro Atlanta one? So you said you serve all 12 counties. So how do they come to find out about the programs?
Yeah, so in most cases, it's their parent reaching out. We served 2,000 students last year, which is a huge number. However, we have about 900 kids on our waiting list.
Wow.
And 700 of those kids are boys. So typically, there's a single mother reaching out to us and saying, I need help. Mm-hmm. And single parents reaching out to really, you know, find some assistance to help them as they're raising their child. So typically it's the parent who reaches out, and then we go from there. But, you know, 900 kids is a big number. If you think about it, you know, there are 1.5 million kids in Atlanta metropolitan. You all may not know that. I keep track of all these numbers. And roughly 500,000 of those kids live in tough situations. So if you look at the United Way child well-being data, you'll see that, you know, 500,000 kids are living in places where there's food deserts, not quality schools, living in poverty. So we face some big challenges across our metropolitan. So my big number is 500,000. Mm-hmm. And, you know, coming on a show like this to reach out to folks and say, hey, if you have some free time, you know, step up and you could really change a young person's life. My goal is to get everybody in Atlanta to mentor somebody. I could, you know, I guarantee you everybody in this room right now has had somebody along the way mentor them to get them to where they are. We got over 7 million people in Atlanta. So just imagine what Atlanta could look like if everybody, you know, stepped up to mentor somebody else. So that's what I'm trying to get done.
I love that goal. And it's true. If you think back on your, just wherever you are in your life, you've always had someone to pour into you in some capacity, whether it be a coach, just someone who came into your life. So to be able to give back in that way. So with that, I mean, it's obviously being able to dedicate the time to doing this, but what would a requirement be, or the list of requirements to, I guess, be eligible to be a big in that situation?
So we just, you know, someone who is, you know, an adult, so over, you know, 18 is what we shoot for. But we want to make it as simple as possible. All we ask for is a year commitment.
Okay.
And, you know, for you just to, you know, incorporate this young person into your, to your, you know, monthly activities as you see fit. We have a process which is sort of like Match.com, where we, you know, match you with a young person that is the right fit for you, because we want these matches to be successful. So you may want to work with a young person who is in the sixth grade, who is into, you know, marketing and communications. And, you know, we make that kind of match happen to make sure that we're matching the bigs and littles the right way.
Okay, I got to know the backstory. I mean, it sounds like the incredibly rewarding work. I was going to say that you must sleep very well at night because of the nature of the work you do. But then again, I got to thinking, I don't know, maybe he just sees 900 like every time he tries to go to sleep. But tell me the backstory. Tell us about the path that got you here, man.
Yeah, no, I don't think we have enough time for the whole backstory. You know, that's been about an hour. But you know, I'm relatively young in my career, and grew up in a community was plagued with poverty, and you know the effects of that, and had my own challenges growing up. And my mentor was my track coach, and he helped me navigate life, helped me get back into school when I got kicked out and went to jail, helped me navigate that, and helped me get into college on a track scholarship. So. Without that mentoring relationship, which I've had many over the years, but that one really sticks out because I was in the beginning, I wouldn't be where I am here today. So I left college when I was 19. My parents thought I was crazy. So we worked this hard to get you in college. You've been through all these challenges. And I said, you know, I'm going to give back. So I moved to D.C. and went into nonprofit and been here ever since, just really trying to help young people go to the next level. So I'm excited to be here in Atlanta. I've been here 3 years now, and I've never been in a city with so much promise. In combination with challenges. I'm here to do my part and try to help, you know, many young people here reach their full potential.
All right, are you going to tell him the connection?
Yeah, I mean, I ran track in college too. Okay, good. So yeah, I assume that we exchanged looks. But I mean, I love that. And it's true. Like, I mean, to that point, you know, having coaches mentor you. But then, so at 19, you just decided that was the time that you wanted to give back. So was it hard for you? Because I have to ask, was it hard to give up that? I mean, you played a sport. It was, you are on scholarship at college, but you just immediately decided, I want to give back, and you up and moved to D.C. I mean, how difficult was that transition for you?
You know, it wasn't. You know, that challenging for me, you know, making the transition from jail to college was a rough, you know, fast transition. So, you know, I was really, you know, not feeling it in place in college. And I met a guy named Bob Woodson, fearless leader, came out of the civil rights movement, has been in nonprofit, you know, doing great work. And he was giving a speech at Hampton University where I was about doing work around violence reduction in some, you know, tough communities around the country. And I told him my story and told him what I wanted to do. And he said, hey, you know, I offer you a job and offer to pay for you to go to school at night at Maryland. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to leave Hampton. And night school was actually a lot better for me because I could focus. I was going to school with adults.
Yeah.
And I could follow my passion and work full time. So, yeah, it was, you know, I enjoyed Hampton University. It was a great experience. And they gave me a chance because a lot of schools didn't when I got in trouble. They pulled their scholarships, but Hampton gave me a scholarship, and I moved up to D.C. and went into nonprofit.
Man, that's a great story, and I'd love to learn more. I'll definitely learn more.
You know, you're going to have to be on her show too now, right?
No problem.
Definitely going to be after the show. I was going to ask you that.
All right, so we need more bigs. That's the big objective right in front of our face, and we need to figure out a way to help you do that. And this is a great thing. We'll have this segment. We'll try to promote it. We'll get it out there.
And are you then particularly looking for males, more men to, I guess, you're looking for bigs in general, but with such a lot of littles, boys, I guess that's what you're looking for, more men to invest?
Yes. Okay. Yes. My challenge is to the men. You know, the women have been stepping up big time. you know, I appreciate you all for that. And, you know, the results are really what we're trying to scale. So 95% of our kids go to the next grade level, 98% graduate on time, and over 99% avoid the criminal justice system. So if we could just scale that, and in order to do that, we have to have more bigs. So 700 boys, 200 girls. If we can get 100 people on the show to step up, that would be very helpful.
All right, age range on the littles?
6 to 8, so K through 6 to 18, so K through 12. And you know, it's, you know, we work with you to figure out what's the best fit for you. So for example, I have a 5-year-old, so I'm going to be matched with a younger kid that I can incorporate into what I'm already doing. So that's typically what I encourage people to do who are, you know, have kids already.
But they're all old enough to speak.
Yes.
I'm cooking on an idea, and it may be too far-fetched and all that, but I just wonder if it might not be fun to sit down and interview some of these kids, let them talk about their lives and the kinds of things that they want to do. And it might be fun to interview some bigs. Yep. If there's anything we can do with our toys.
Yes.
I'm just thinking out loud, and it's an offline conversation, but we want to help.
Right.
And so we're going to try.
No, I appreciate it. That would be great. We can bring some bigs and littles on and just talk about the work and share some stories.
Fantastic. All right, let's get coordinates before we wrap for people to reach out and get plugged into this program. Bigs, littles, whatever's appropriate.
Yeah, so it's Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Metro Atlanta. So you could go to bbbsatl.org and learn more about what we're doing and get plugged in.
Fantastic. Katie, what a marvelous way to invest a Tuesday morning.
Yeah, I love it.
Is it Tuesday?
It is Tuesday. Good job. Got the day of the week right.
All right. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton for Katie Galley, our guest this morning, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.